As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, "Follow me," and he got up and followed him. And as he sat at dinner in the house, many tax collectors and sinners came and were sitting with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" But when he heard this, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I have come to call not the righteous, but saying." Then the disciples of John came to him, saying, "Why do we and the Pharisees fast often, but your disciples do not fast?" And Jesus said to them, "The wedding guests cannot mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them, can they? The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast. No one sews a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old cloak, for the patch pulls away from the cloak, and a worse tear is made. Neither is new wine put into old wineskins, otherwise the skins burst, and the wine is spilled, and the skins are destroyed. But new wine is put into fresh wineskins, and so both are preserved." Holy wisdom, holy word. Thanks be to God.
We talk here almost every Sunday about the domination system, which is a worldview and an order based on that worldview. An order and worldview that is founded in fear. The domination system has been in place for so long that we no longer see it as an imposed order. For most of us, it's just reality. To be obedient is not only good, it feels like common sense. The system of domination is a lens on reality which has organized the structures of our civilization to such an extent that even when somebody rebels against a particular manifestation of a domination-based order, the order they create as a replacement is almost always guided by the worldview of domination. It's very difficult for us to think and act outside of that worldview. In the story of Exodus, a group of slaves chose to believe that God was on their side. In believing this, these slaves began a long journey to figure out what the alternative to domination might look like. This journey comprises one stream of thought in the Bible. The other stream is made up of those who join with pretty much every other nation and religion in saying that God operates within domination's worldview. Both of these streams are in the Bible, and they are utter opposites. If one is true, then the other is false. Domination wants humanity to divide itself into groups, which are then arranged hierarchically in terms of better or worse, sinner and saint, criminal and citizen, patriot and subversive, native-born and immigrant, men and women, white and less than white, rich and less than rich, on and on. These divisions provide a rationale for why some people get more of the benefits of the social order and some people get less. Domination is so ingrained in all of us that categorizing people in terms of these differences comes to us unconsciously. Today's reading starts off with Jesus calling a tax collector to be a disciple. Most people then would have had a grudge against the tax man. So for Jesus to call such a person to be one of his inner circle was a challenge to everyone. Later in the reading, the Pharisees believed that they were being faithful when they denounced Jesus because he was in the company of not only tax collectors, but sinners. Jesus was making a point by calling such people as disciples and hanging out with such people. It's a point that Jesus makes in other places in the Gospels. His actions challenge the tendency to separate ourselves and judge others. When God chose to stand with slaves in the Exodus, it was a radical act of inclusion and the reversal of the priorities of domination. By putting slaves or the poor or sinners or those who are in other ways excluded on God's priority list, it isn't an act of excluding others. It isn't saying that you will only be in God's good graces if you become a slave or poor or a sinner. But by prioritizing the ones excluded and abused by the ways of the world, a vision and practice is put into place that says that everyone is loved by God and deserves to be treated accordingly. We can think of groups in the Gospels in terms of our current political divisions. The priests, who don't show up in today's reading, would have been the conservatives. The Pharisees would have been the moderates. And the disciples of John would have been the liberals. John was Jesus's fellow prophet and mentor. There would have been no group more sympathetic to what Jesus said and did than the followers of John. But even these allies had a problem with the behavior of Jesus and his followers. The conversation about the failure to fast is Jesus nudging John's disciples to question their goal, whether their goal in life is to achieve personal righteousness or change the world. Jesus talks about old wineskins not working for new wine. And for those of you who haven't made wine, new wine is still fermenting. And in that process, it's producing carbon dioxide gas, which can cause a wineskin to expand. A new wineskin would have been more elastic and better able to handle the swelling caused by that gas. New wine needed a new wineskin. Often the reaction to the failure of religion to live up to our ideals of faithfulness is to abandon it, especially here in Seattle, where lots of people have abandoned religion. Some have substituted a spiritual but not religious practice, which generally falls into the same trap as the followers of John. It places personal spirituality as the goal. While there's nothing wrong with being spiritual, it does little for others and certainly doesn't seek to amass the tools required to make significant changes to the world around us. To really change the world, we need to come together and assert a worldview that challenges the assumptions and practices that flourish all around us. We need to organize ourselves, placing the needs of those who are exploited, abused, and ignored over our desires for personal piety. An organized group dedicated to preserving and extending a particular understanding about the nature of ultimate truth can be a definition of religion. And as such, it shows that religion is essential. Jesus demonstrated a radical alternative to domination in his actions and words. He also demonstrated that this alternative could not be contained within the old domination-based assumptions and structures of the Pharisees or even John's disciples. The anti-domination stream of thought alive in Judaism since the Exodus was breaking to the surface, and the old structures of thought and organization would not work as a means of organizing it. Something new was needed. Dominant Christianity is just as compromised by domination today as was dominant Judaism in Jesus's day. Like their Jewish forebears, Christians generally think that religion is about their own spiritual journey. Conservative and moderate Christians, like the Pharisees, seek out and denounce those they call sinners. They have aligned themselves with fiscal conservatives, linking tax breaks for the wealthy with laws punishing the LGBT community and other ways of social conservatism. Liberal Christians, like the followers of John, focus more on inclusion and justice, but it's often as personal or congregational piety. Changing the world is less of a priority than appearing inclusive. They have a hard time envisioning the work of making Christianity a real force for justice. Jesus was about something more fundamental. The stream of faith that runs from the Exodus through Jesus says that those who suffer are the highest priority. People who are suffering from a lack of food or housing or medical care for themselves and their children really do not need Christian conservatives to denounce sinners or liberal Christians being politically correct. They need a just distribution of rights and resources in ways that will liberate them from their suffering. If the church is about following the example of Jesus, then the question is not, what do I get out of church? It is, what can I give to the world-changing work of Jesus? We have to stop thinking of our efforts for justice as symbolic and start figuring out how to make real change. We're going to have to find ways of inviting people to see beyond their justice issue and instead link up with people who have a wide variety of issues. We have to get past cutting ourselves up into religions, denominations, and congregations and start weaving together groups who place concern for the most vulnerable as the highest priority. What does a new wineskin church look like? Well, it looks like building a movement. It looks like working with others to gain enough power to make real change. It means thinking of church as something more than a place to meet nice people and build a personal relationship with God. But instead, seeing church as a place to organize ourselves to transform the world. It means thinking about our lives as part of a larger struggle. It means thoughtfully and strategically living and working to bring hope to a hurting world. If we want a different world, we're going to need a different approach to our lives, including church. The good news is that the path of Christ is a path of purpose and hope, and we can all use that. The good news is that there are all sorts of people out there struggling for a better world. The good news is we have each other and a vision to guide us. And that takes us a long way. Amen.